Star Wars Report. My name's Riley Blanton. Oh, we've got a good show for you tonight. We've got a lot of great stuff coming up. Let's introduce our panel. And yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, it is a panel this week. Beginning with my sister and co-host each and every week here at the Star Wars Report, Bethany.
Hello, everybody. Just happy eating peaches here. Millions of peaches.
Millions of peaches coming for me. Come on! Oh, no, that's going to be stuck in my head for the whole night. Also, we've got our regular third co-host, the EU defender and guru. Although, you can't claim both now that you're doing Beyond the Films because you have Nathan Butler with the guru title.
That's true. I'll just stick with the defender.
There you go. Well, that's why it's
in
so...
In a world with exactly. EU bashers, someone has to stand up and get the tomato in the face.
Oh, I guess that's me, panelist number two.
Exactly. And it's just too much awesome over there at Beyond the Films. I just started your latest episode, so that's you guys are doing a great job over there. But we've got two other folks joining us this week. What we're doing is a big old round table, big fat discussion about all things Clone Wars Season 4, our thoughts on its greatest moments, its slowest moments, its coolest moments, its Darth Mauliest moments. And joining us for that kind of discussion, beginning this roundtable, is Teresa Delgado from Fangirl Next Door.
Hey guys, how's it going?
It's going very well. Really enjoying the fine spring weather here in, I was about to say South Georgia, and then I realized I can't take that title because there's a gentleman who embodies South Georgia in the best of ways. And that's Steve Glosson from Geek Out Loud. Welcome to the show, sir.
I'm Steve.
Hey, well, it's transitional.
Guys, thanks so much for having me. I'm looking forward to our discussion tonight.
I am too. We're just going to kind of play it fast and loose here and just kind of go in chronological order and talk about the season in general and kind of recap our overall thoughts now that we've had a little bit of time to breathe after the season finale and what a finale it was. That was quite a thrill ride. But, you know, for people listening to the show, the year was 2008 when I stole Steve Glosson's joke for the first time. No, that's one thing I've done many times before. But I do want to tell the story, Steve, where the first time I ever listened to an episode of Geek Out Loud was, I think it was fall 2008. Sounds about right.
Okay.
And I downloaded your Star Wars episode, and I'd listened to the Forcecast for some time, and I hadn't even started podcasting at that point, but there was something different about it, and your love of the saga went beyond, kind of really honestly what we do here, just kind of talking about the latest news and commentary on what's happening in the fan community, that kind of thing. But you really poured your heart into some of those old episodes in the archives of Geek Out Loud, and it really turned me on to a different world and a different way of approaching Star Wars, where it's easy sometimes, especially for Bethany and I here, you know, kind of getting entrenched in the fan community, to just watch the latest, you know, Twitter uprising and the blogosphere and what people are posting, and just kind of get lost in the conversation and forget about, you know, what it is about Star Wars that inspires us and brings us together. And that's really the premise of the show here, where we really just want to share a journey through a common interest in that Star Wars. So it's really not, I've said it before, but it's really not about Star Wars itself in it so much as the conversations that we can have together from our common interest. And Steve, you really do embody that kind of interest in many great ways. So let me say this. I'm a great admirer of yours, and also really pleased that you decided to join us this week.
Oh, I'm really pleased you invited me to come on.
Yeah. And so let's get right into it. Clone Wars Season 4, and go.
So, so did everybody like Season 4, just overall, of the four seasons that we've had, was it your favorite, least favorite?
Well, for me, I actually think Season 3 is still my favorite. I really enjoyed Season 4. I thought there was a lot of really good reveals and some storytelling that was really captivating, but I don't know. I just really, really, really loved Season 3, so... Mm-hmm.
Okay. Were you in the camp of kind of the latter half, Teresa, was much better than the first half, or did you kind of enjoy all of it?
For what, 3 or 4?
Season 3, excuse me.
I enjoyed all of it, because I actually enjoyed a lot of the political episodes and stuff like that, so I'm one of those people.
No, I enjoy it too. I think it's interesting, because a lot of people don't like politics in Star Wars, or at least in in the prequel era, but I do think it does lend it, when done well, it lends itself. And I think one of the greatest strengths of the prequels is possibly how they approach the political aspect, especially when it comes to the performance of Ian McDiarmid. And so they kind of harken back to that era of when the political process was a big part of the plot, and that was in season three. Not as much in season four, though. Steve, what were your overall thoughts of season four?
I thought overall it was strong. I thought it was probably one of the stronger, or I won't say stronger, but more consistent seasons.
Yes.
You know, I really feel like they've kind of gotten into their stride, into their groove with how they're crafting the seasons episode by episode. Season three was the problem is with all of the seasons since season one is that they do these promos and they do these previews and they really promote a lot of stuff. And for example, the whole Darth Maul thing, you know, has been known for many, many moons now. Mm-hmm. And now we're waiting, you know, we had to wait till the end, which not a complaint, just an observation of how things go. And so I think that what happens is leading into the season, there's a lot of big hype. There's a lot of hype. And then as the television show does what it has to do and just kind of levels out and begins this journey to the end, it's easy to forget that it's a television show and they're not able to do everything that you saw in the promos immediately, you know, and if they did, there'd be nothing to look forward to for the rest of the season. But I feel like this season was consistent in the way that it just kind of each episode seemed to be either really strong or really fun.
Yeah.
There seemed to be very little filler. I think the weakest two episodes that people think that the weakest two episodes are the two that focus in on R2 and 3PO.
Yes, yes, Mission. And what was it? Nomad Droids.
Yeah. And I had fun with those. But I think overall it was a very consistently strong season.
Yeah.
Also, with an amazing finale.
Yes. Yes. We'll get to that. Yeah. It's also interesting. I don't know if it has anything to do with what you're saying, Steve, but it's the season with the most long arcs in it, with not just two parters, but three and four and five parters.
Well, do you guys feel like that? That kind of maybe hurt a little bit where they went a little bit longer. I think the tail end of season three worked so well because of like these three, like it seemed like everything from the moment you got to the Savage Opress arc until the end was a three episode arc, with the exception of the final arc, which was the two episodes with the Wookiees and the Trandoshans. But I feel like that was a formula that they maybe should have stuck with, because I feel like that really worked. A trilogy of episodes, a trilogy of episodes, a trilogy of episodes. As we got into some of the four-parters, it just seemed, particularly the Krell arc, just seemed kind of drawn out and a little bit long.
Yeah.
No, I would totally agree with you on that, actually, because I like the three-parters. But, you know, for instance, with Krell and then even in the Bounty Hunter stuff, and it just got to be so long. You sort of lost your interest in it. And, you know, just to go back to just a thought, it's, you know, for me, it is a cartoon show and it is Star Wars. But if you think about the fact that it is a cartoon show and it is, you know, still geared towards a younger audience, and being a teacher, they're only going to hang on for so long. Mm-hmm. So if you go on with a story for three, four, five parts, you know, they're not going to stay with you, which is why a lot of the cartoons on Cartoon Network or even the shows on the Disney Channel, you know, you've got one episode done, you move on to something else, you know, because it holds the interest. But the three-parters were okay. I think the trilogy is a good, you know, setup.
That does seem to be the magic number.
Yeah.
Although it's interesting because, you know, Star Wars has to walk this fine line in the Clone Wars, in that you're doing a weekly serialized television show. But when you mentioned like Disney Channel or other Cartoon Network shows, those are all very formulaic, very similar. It's like if you go back to the days of Gilligan's Island, I mean, it's a very formulaic. They're trying to get off the island. And that's not the case in the complex world that is the Star Wars in the prequel era. So they have to, I think, walk this fine line, and I think it was done best this season. Season four, I'll just say right now, is my favorite season. But I guess before we get into too much great detail, Mark, we haven't touched on you. Where does season four fall for you?
I'm actually with you, Riley. I thought the fourth season for me was the best one, but I think that makes sense because each season has progressively gotten better. I actually disagree with Steve and Teresa. I actually liked the four arcs. I thought that moving it more and making the story longer for me worked better. I love the general arcs, the Carnage of Krell, yeah. Darkness of Umbra, you know, all of that. And it was the clone aspect of it that I really liked the most. So they started exploring deep issues, issues that, you know, for me were some of my favorite issues in some of my favorite EU novels. So I really liked seeing that kind of being explored and blown up and seeing where they went with that. We had the bounty hunter action, all that with the box. You know, it was a lot of fun. And I liked what they did with Obi-Wan this season. I mean, we got to see young Ewan McGregor for a moment. I mean, that was cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
And I agree, though, with Steve on the aspect of the hype. You know, I don't have the regular internet cable, so I didn't have as many trailers and previews dumped down on my throat. There were a lot of Twitter actions going on. Check this one out, check that one out. But I really wasn't paying that much attention to them because of what happened last season and all the hype built up around stuff. So I kind of backed away.
I think that's a good idea,
though. That's where I went. I was like, I don't want to get too hyped out.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I actually had to look up what the tagline to this season was, which is certainly not the case before, where it was like, season two, Bounty Hunters. You see, secrets revealed. When Star Wars, The Clone Wars, Season 3, Secrets Revealed. And the Season 4 was Battle Lines, and I think that was a very appropriate title, but it wasn't quite as much promoted as if it was like a season was an extended long Star Wars movie and had a title.
But I mean, don't you, I think that was smart.
Yes.
In as much with Rise of the Bounty Hunters in Season 2, you think about when we finally got to see the rise of the bounty hunters that everyone wanted to see. There were a few bounty hunter arcs through there, but nothing like what happened at the end of that season two with Boba Fett and Ara Sing and all the stuff that happened there. And then with Secrets Revealed, you know, if you go back and watch that first half of season three, it's a lot stronger than it felt to me watching it as it happened, as it played out. But the secrets that were revealed were like not really that big a deal until you get to that second half of the season. So it's like the taglines, they fit in a way, but they really didn't fit. And so what's funny, though, is that Battle Lines this season, I feel like, really fit in so many different ways to what was happening throughout the season.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and another thing was the little episodes. You know, you felt like it was like a small single episode here, but then like we see in Brothers, you know, it gets picked up again later. And the duologies were the same way. It was like they weren't just singled out. They were picked up again. And that was what I really liked about it, was you really had that feeling of, you know, okay, when Savage got off in the, I believe it was the first to last one, Brothers, when he gets off and he's on Dathomir, but they don't tell you it at first, and you're seeing the carnage of what happened in Massacre. I was just like, oh, this is cool. Because you really felt that, like, this is happening now. It wasn't like, okay, the planet's been cleaned up, swept up, and he's back again kind of thing. It's like the devastation was still there.
Well, as segregated as those two duologies felt, they were actually being advertised as a four-part season finale.
Yeah, which was very interesting to me because it didn't really feel like a four-part season finale. At the same time, I did like how the story tied in. You can see Asajj Ventress as a character growing, and that continues throughout the, if you want to call it a four-part arc, but it doesn't feel like a four-part arc in that it doesn't closely follow one storyline.
No. What was a four-part arc solidly was the Krell arc, and that was... That was one of the all three of us here, the main host here at the Star Wars Report, I think felt differently than a lot of fans did, where I realized that there was a lot of people who thought it did go on too long. And actually, the Krell arc for me, personally, I think was the best arc of episodes in the Clone Wars, at least off the top of my head.
Yeah,
and
I'm with you.
The reason I felt that way was just because the depth of character that General Pong Krell was explored, just what hasn't happened before in the Clone Wars. Usually when we meet a new character in the Clone Wars that wasn't in the movies, he's either glossed over or dead at the end of the episode if he's a bad guy. And I really felt like it was a dramatic series of episodes that came to a dramatic conclusion. And they play really well all strung together as a long-form hour special, if you wanted to put it that way.
The only complaint I had, and I have it if they're going to continue with four-issue arcs, is that they only stream three episodes on the site.
Yes.
This is true.
Although they have, Mark, they have been getting progressively better. With season one, they would wait a week. And then after a while, it was like season two or three where it was every 3 days. And season four, they actually put it up the next day.
Yeah. Well, that's how I'm watching is streaming the next day. And I am so glad that they moved that up. But I went to watch The General with my dad, and Darkness of Umbra was already off. It was right when Carnage of Krell came out. And I was like, oh, man, if they would have just kept it for like one more day.
Mm-hmm. That would be nice.
I guess one thought, Bethany. Oh, one thought I have on the long arcs versus short arcs thing is I like both, and I do think sometimes 4-episode arcs or 5-episode arcs can get too long. Is it would be nice to see more of an overarching theme in the Clone Wars, maybe a little less mission based, monster of the week based, and more character driven, and this is how the characters deal with issues. And that's one reason why I liked Massacre, Bounty, Brothers, and Revenge, was because we got to see the continuing character development of different characters, particularly with Asajj.
I would agree with you, Bethany, on that. Because so if there was an overarching theme that went through, it would make it a lot easier for me. But, you know, originally the Clone Wars seemed to be built on you're going to go, you know, from one battle to another battle, you know.
Yeah.
And then they just haven't really kept it consistent, so it's been kind of changing. But I think starting with season three, they started doing these arcs, and so I think people are getting used to that, which is good, and I like it. But going back to what you guys were saying, Massacre and Bounty didn't feel like they went with Brothers and Revenge, like, to me at all.
Yeah.
You could see the connections, but it didn't feel like it was all built together, and personally, being like such a huge Darth Maul fan, like I loved Brothers in Revenge, but I was also kind of sad because I was like, okay, because
we were all thinking four part Darth Maul. Yeah, 4-part Darth Maul,
which is coming up. It is coming up next season, and that's been unequivocally confirmed from multiple sources that Darth Maul is coming back. And I really do hope that they keep carrying through, because this, if you call it the Asajj Ventress arc instead of the Darth Maul arc, it goes way back to season three, and really begins to just carry through. And I love that idea. Steve, what are some plots that you would really like to see continued and revisited in season five? If you were to speculate.
Well, you know, I definitely want to see. I really missed Anakin and Obi-Wan this season. You know, it seemed like they weren't quite in it enough for me, and I missed Ahsoka big time, you know, because it just felt like the times we got to spend with them were all too short. And so anything with that is going to be great. I, you know, of course I'm interested to see Darth Maul and Savage Opress and what their plans are. I'm interested to see where this Asajj Ventress thing goes. You know, going back to the Krell arc, this is what really disappointed me, because when all the previews were happening and you see this, I forget what species he is. Help me out. Krell.
Oh, no.
I just blinked. Okay.
All right. When you see this Dexter Jetster with two double-bladed lightsabers flopping around, I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is going to be my favorite Jedi ever, because I love Dexter Jetster. And
exactly.
And then he ends up being a bad guy, and I was like, oh, you know. And throughout the entire thing, at least the first two episodes of that, I was like, he's going to show some nobility. He's going to turn around and show some nobility. There's going to be something. And he never did. And so, you know, I would have maybe even liked to see him get away and see that develop, see that flesh out a little bit.
Ooh, that would
but I think, you know, as far as things that can progress further, definitely – can't wait to spend more time with Boba Fett and his gang. And I can never get enough. I'll be honest with you guys. I've never been one of these fans who loves like the tertiary characters. I've never been one of the ones, like when I watched Empire Strikes Back as a kid, it was cool to see the bounty hunter standing there. And, you know, Boba Fett was cool, but I never was like, oh, he's my favorite now because he's so mysterious. I've never been one of those people. But Imbo is absolutely my new favorite character.
Imbo is awesome.
I want to spend more time with Imbo.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. It's a and they do and that they did that a lot this season. They did bring in a lot of as you say tertiary characters that were just kind of outside cameos in the films, whether it be Dengar and Simon Pegg or whether it be I guess you could sort of call it, was it how do you pronounce it? A Yuuzhan Vong Beast that they were kind of vaguely referencing in that one episode. Yeah.
No, it wasn't the Yuuzhan Vong Voxen, it was the Vornsker from it was the same. Oh, I mean, they created the Voxen out of the Vornsker, but okay. It was actually from Zahn's Heir to the Empire, where that was introduced off of the planet Merkur. Okay.
See, Mark, this is why we have you on, because of my utter lack of EU knowledge in some areas.
Yeah, when they first said it was one, I was like, oh, a Vornsker, that's cool. But then they pointed out it was another species, which was still cool, though. Okay. I want one.
But I guess there were a lot of outside characters that made cameos here and there. Throughout the season,
and
but,
larger
which I do
than
enjoy.
Cameos too. You know, they'd get their own episodes sometimes. I think it's really interesting to explore just the different areas of the Star Wars universe, which the Clone Wars really does allow us to explore that visually, and that doesn't happen as much in the movies because the movies are more focused on a certain set of characters and a certain fight. So that is neat about the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Well. The one thing I'd say for the season that disappointed me was I was really looking forward to, you know, the Prong Krell episodes kind of touched on the clones, but I really wanted to have some kind of explanation as to why Rex had his cobbled together armor. I mean, we've been given it as fans, but I really wanted a spot in the story where, you know, like maybe Ahsoka asked him what's with the new armor, Anakin, and he, you know, stopped and actually gave his opinion on why he had it cobbled together the way he did. I think there's a really cool story that could be told there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's, I guess it's interesting because there seems to be this odd balance between the 22-minute show that seems to either have too much time where they have episodes that just kind of spike off the main story, and that, you know, that Steve, that happened a lot this season where we followed side characters a lot more, like Asajj Ventress, but at the same time when we do have arcs that have to do with Ahsoka and Obi-Wan and Anakin, they seem to not have enough time.
Yeah. And I think that we could explore all of these different things and use Anakin, Ahsoka, and Obi-Wan. They could be the ones on the mission trying to find Darth Maul. They could be the ones facing off against Darth Maul and Savage Opress, because they have the Chosen One and a very good master of Jedi, and apparently a very bright, very well-trained apprentice who that has a lot of force power. Who better really to face that menace if Yoda or Mace Windu can't be hunting them all across the galaxy?
Oh man, if they send off Ahsoka to chase down Maul and we never hear from again, I'll be upset.
That'd
be an interesting. There was an article that Pete Morrison wrote on the site the other day, and it was about speculation for where Maul might go and how he might be used in the future now that there's this whole new world of possibility that really I don't think the fan community has thought about because we've been too focused on the here, the now, not to quote Liam Neeson.
The legs.
Yeah. not, but we do seem to be very focused on the here and now of what Darth Maul is doing in the Clone Wars right now. But it does open up a lot of possibilities. And previously, I wouldn't have really expected too much out of the team over at the Clone Wars to do anything too radical as far as the character of Maul. I could see him like coming back for a few episodes and then being killed off or being rendered outside of the story. But from what it sounds like, they're going to use him a lot throughout season 5. And
interviews with Sam Witwer, Dave Filoni, yep, all that sort of stuff.
I guess I could see... the main line was, you know, Darth Maul, underworld crime boss in the live action series. You know, there's some rather radical possibilities, but...
Well, actually, that possibility is based on speculation that is based on the Scholastic Star Wars The Clone Wars Darth Maul Shadow Conspiracy book that's due out this September. The summary reads...
So it's like not due till this September?
The summary reads, for the first time ever, Scholastic is publishing Star Wars Clone Wars. based off the hit Cartoon Network TV show viewed by over 2.4 million every week. Our story will follow the highly anticipated return of Darth Maul,
okay.
the infamous villain of Episode 1, whose popularity
that.
Rivals that of Boba Fett. When Darth Maul reunites with his brother Savage Opress, can even Obi-Wan stop him, quote, before he rallies the criminal underworld to his cause?
Dun, dun, dun.
So this has legs. But I'm sorry, guys.
There's further speculation based on Amazon.com's summary of it as well, and also based on the Darth Maul Shadowhunter books, just lines drawn from them where Darth Maul has connections with the underworld. So, not that.
Okay.
Well, Star Wars the movie. Comics. They actually had a Darth Maul comic where he was sent to take out the heads of Black Sun.
Yeah.
Wow. And I, oh my goodness.
But he spares a good bit of Black Sun because Sidious says that there's a purpose for Black Sun. So if Maul remembers that.
Hmm.
Dot, dot, dot.
And there's a power vacuum with poor old Uncle Zero gone. I'm telling.
Well, and they both fall right at the time of season 5 kicking off.
Well, I'm not really surprised, honestly. I mean, think about how big Darth Maul ended up becoming after, you know, the release of Episode 1. He's very similar to Boba Fett, that he didn't really become popular until later on. You know, so now they have this opportunity to really do something with him. And if they didn't take it, I feel like they would not be, you know, honoring fans to an extent.
Well, and it's,
Teresa, you mentioned
ahead,
that you're a fan of Darth Maul earlier.
Yeah.
And then, so I have two questions. One, what makes you such a fan of Darth Maul? And two, where do you see him going? What do you, I mean, what do you hope they do with him?
Okay, well, to answer the first question, the reason I am such a fan of Darth Maul is that there was always something about him that was mysterious to me, and it was untold, and you could tell that he was so troubled, and it made him so dark. And that's what I loved about him, because, I don't know, I never got that same feeling about Darth Vader or about Emperor Palpatine or about anybody else. And then the other character that I feel the same way with is actually Darth Bane. So I kind of like the ones that, you know, have more, they're sort of more twisted. And so that's why I've always liked him. And it also, Phantom Menace was the first Star Wars film I saw in the theater. So I just got really attached to him as a character. And then I'd like to see him become, I'd like to see him become more of like a boss in the, not so much bounty hunter world, but in the world of, you know, your dark characters. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be nice to see him. You've got your whole thing going on with Palpatine and all that stuff and what's going on with the Clone Wars. For me, it would be nice to see something coming in on the side of another dark and evil force that's coming around because they're so angry about the stuff that happened to them that they just want to, you know, take out everyone instead of really having an allegiance for a certain thing to become a, you know, to take over the galaxy and all that stuff. They're just plain out flat for revenge, out to get anyone. It doesn't matter who it is, you know, just don't get in my way. And I like dark characters like that.
Yeah. Well, see, it's interesting to me because I kind of half expect him to go after Dooku and to try to reclaim his place under Palpatine.
That would
obviously Galactic's not going that way.
Right. I mean, it would be cool if he did go that way, but I could see Darth Maul going that way and being like, you know, I want to take my place back, you know, in the Order of the Sith and all that stuff. And then he gets there and then he's like, you didn't come after me. You didn't come and help me. You sent me to my doom, you know, and to go after Palpatine, which would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that would be neat to see if they could show it on the Clone Wars. I don't know if they want to do the Palpatine reveal on the Clone Wars.
I don't think
they
will.
No, I know, but you know, it's just in my head.
What about let me ask you guys this now, because you talk about him going after the underworld, and this is something we've kind of glossed over and have seemingly forgotten about. I forgot about it until just now. we've got Mandalorians still out there. We saw them this season.
Katie Sackhoff. You know, yeah.
Is there a chance that Maul could hook up with the Mandos?
That would be awesome.
That
honestly.
Is such a cool idea.
Wow. That would be like
it's
the
always a possibility.
That would be the ultimate fan subgroup service where they take all the Maul fans and all the Mandalorian fans and put Mandalorian armor.
The Mandalorians.
Oh me.
Well, you know what would be interesting is to see Boba Fett and Darth Maul come together, you know, and to start to build an alliance there, which leads into building alliances with the Mandalorians. Like that would be
interesting because though the other bounty hunters don't know it yet, Asajj Ventress really kind of threw Boba Fett under the bus.
Yeah, or into the proverbial chest, into the chest.
Yeah, yes. into the chest.
Well, they have made Asajj one of the most interesting characters on the show just by the very nature of the fact
yes.
that she is absolutely alone in the universe. She has nowhere to go now.
No loyalty.
And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wonder what, when she says she knows what she's after right now, they haven't really told us what that is. So I'm really curious to see where she goes from here on out.
Yeah, it has to go beyond simple revenge.
Yep. I think she realized that herself, that getting revenge isn't something that was really fulfilling. It didn't work. It didn't make her feel any better. She had no purpose in it.
You know something I'd really like to see, and it's a character that's kind of gone by the wayside in the Clone Wars, but I'd like to see something come back up with Aayla Secura. Because this is a time when they could really use her,
yeah.
and they could really use her intelligence and her cunningness, you know? And it would be really cool for me to just see a good episode that has all the strong female characters, like including Asajj Ventress and Ahsoka and Aayla and, you know, all these characters, you know?
Luminari.
Yeah, and you know, even have Padme in there and just have a really strong female-centered episode, I think would really be good for the Clone Wars to do.
Yeah, definitely. I could see where that might be missing a little bit, you know.
Yeah, it's been a little
well,
while.
Well, even with the figures. I mean, I've gone on about this before. My daughters want these figures, and you can never see them. The most you can find is a few Ahsokas, and they've only got, like, two, maybe three outfits for her now, even though she's had, like, so many others. And yet we have these other characters that are out there, and, you know, and we got how many versions of Cad Bane now? I mean, come on!
I just think it's a really good time, and it's a really good avenue for them to use the female characters. I mean, if we're going to talk about long story arcs, you know, then let's talk about how all of these other characters and, you know, strong female characters contribute to the Clone Wars and not just the political realm. You know, I mean, they can all stand, hold their own and fight.
Well, I think the first one you mentioned was Aayla Secura. And I think that there is no shortage of fans that would love to see more of her on the Clone Wars. You know, she's one that, whether because she's hot or whatever, she captured the imagination of fans. And so I think it'd be very, very interesting to see more of her.
Yes, I agree. Because, you know, the only time, and it's not in the current Clone Wars series that she really got a berth. It was in the original Clone Wars. And she had, like, I think it was like 3 or 4 episodes, and it was just, yeah, they were good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They were really good.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a break from our Clone Wars conversation for just a minute. We've been teasing it a little bit, but we have a giveaway to announce. I'm actually very excited about this one, guys, because we are doing our kind of 1,138 Twitter giveaway as well as some Facebook giveaways, giving away all kinds of awesome stuff provided by your Star Wars Report staff here. So we had a good time. Bethany was busy this afternoon wrapping up the giveaway and announcing the finding our winners. We used random.org to randomly select one of our entries. And Bethany, what do we have on the plate for the giveaway this time around?
For our Twitter giveaway, we have the Force Unleashed 2 novel hardcover. That's pretty cool.
Okay.
And for our Facebook giveaway, we have the third Darth Bane novel, Dynasty of Evil.
Vader, can't stop me
edition.
Now. Nothing can. I've got our Twitter winner is, drumroll, @, and the reason I had to throw that to you is to get ready to pronounce the name, is @ Raya Evlikali. I hope I pronounced that right, and we'll get in contact with you.
You pronounced that all wrong. It was @ Steve Glosson.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
So, okay.
and also, big congratulations to our Facebook winner as well, Andy Duffy. That's a little bit easier to pronounce. We'll get in contact with you guys and get your mailing addresses. And congratulations. Thanks for tuning into the show. We do appreciate it. That's always a fun time. So congratulations once again to our winner.
I promise the books were only read twice. I didn't get to a third read.
All right. And Bethany, you have one other thing before we get back to the Clone Wars?
Yes, I wanted to announce on our show that there is an art auction going on for baby Princess Leia. Now, for those of our new listeners who may not know, and I got this from TheForce.net. Thanks for putting out a good press release for this, guys. Leia Eskenazi is the daughter of two Star Wars fans, Zev and Francesca, and at the young age of 2 months, she began to suffer from high fevers and seizures. At the time, the cause of these symptoms was unknown, but over the coming months, she developed fast-growing cataracts, breathing problems, tremors, random eye movements, and more.
Yeah.
She had surgery for her cataracts, had a feeding tube put in, and had a, I don't know how to pronounce this, tracheotomy. Oh, goodness. Anyway, she's been quite sick with a mitochondrial disease for a good while, and their medical bills have skyrocketed with no end in sight.
And we've been covering this for a while on the Star Wars Report as the fan community really came together.
Yep. They still need our help, and this is a way that you can join in and help. There is a multi-item art auction going on eBay for her with many different Star Wars and other geeky art paintings and pictures and signed stuff. And so you can put in bids for those things, get some awesome swag, but also benefit a good cause and help a little girl.
Definitely. We'll put a link to that in our show notes. And you guys can go to the charity auction. You can also follow, Baby Leia's journey on her thing. And also the Leia's journey for Leia, spelled differently, that Chris is doing. We'll be getting her back here somewhat soon as she continues her journey around the world. We'll get back to the Clone Wars discussion in just a minute right after this break. We'll be talking about our overall thoughts on the season, more speculation for season 5, and how we think this series might win. Win. End. Win. Hell, the Separatist wins, what we're trying to say. No. But yeah, I think the end is in sight. I think it is. So we'll be right back.
Winning!
And we're back. Season 4 definitely ended with a bang, and we've touched on it, Darth Maul, where he might go, but I want to throw out this question, guys, before we run out of time, and we don't want to cut into our next show, so we do have a little bit of time left, but I do want to ask you guys this, where does it end? I mean, not in a bad way, but I feel like the
end... Where does it end?
I feel like the end is in sight. Am I alone?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely alone.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
Well, thanks for tuning in to the Star Wars Report. It's been a okay, then.
He's all alone. No one else to help him.
Well, Star Wars, hear me out. Star Wars has so far operated in parts of 3 and parts of 6. Think about it that way. I think, I don't think season 5 is the last season at all, because I think they'll make a decision and promote it as the last season, a la Smallville, end with a bang. And really want to end the series on a high note. So I don't think season 5 is, but season 6, I think completing 2 trilogies of Clone Wars seasons might be, at least by the numbers, something that happens. And I could see them trying to wrap up this story by introducing these underworld elements into the Clone Wars, and that way that can kind of flow through to the live action series era. Whether or not they ever do the live action series, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, but it doesn't make sense in the aspect that season three, they told us they had scripts written up five more seasons. So, I mean, unless they were only meaning they had them up to season five, but I don't recall that being the case. I thought they had scripts for five more seasons, and that was back in season three. So
well,
to me,
they do
it's
have
to go to at least eight.
Mark, they do have 50 episodes of scripts for the live action series too that have been sitting around for about a year or two. So
that's true.
That is, there's that.
Which brings me to this point, and it's something that's been talked about on other shows and that sort of thing. The line from Star Wars was, you know, my father didn't fought in the Clone Wars, plural. He was a navigator on a spice freighter. Mm. And the idea of the Clone Wars is out there. In Episode 2, in Attack of the Clones, Yoda says, "Begun, the Clone War has." And I'm wondering if it's just kind of a grammatical thing, kind of a throwaway grammatical thing that people do sometimes, like when they say Walmarts. If we're going to actually see something beyond Revenge of the Sith in this particular series. You know, yeah. If this is going to take us up to and through Revenge of the Sith to see on the backside, maybe, I don't know, maybe the birth of a little bit of rebellion, maybe the clones, being used, you know, it's called the Clone Wars because they're being used to really solidify the Emperor's power throughout the galaxy.
Yeah.
That would be very interesting.
I just remember, where did I keep seeing, I remember the hype around episode 3, and I remember reading about, I think it was like on the back of an action figure or a storybook or something, but I have this memory of the 14-year-old me reading about this great breakout of war where the clones turn on the Utapauans, and there's going to be this big battle. First, the Utapauans are on the clone side, but then as the war ends and changes sides, the Utapauans realize, hey, wait a second, they're killing the Jedi, and we happen to like the Jedi. Mm-hmm. And they turn. And what am I crazy? Did that happen?
You see a little bit of that in. In the movie, as Obi-Wan's getting away, you see them kind of leading some Utapauans off in handcuffs. You also see it on Kashyyyk with some dead Wookiees and the way the Wookiees are now kind of, you know, trying to... You see little hints of it, but you don't get to see it full-fledgedly. And so that's what I'm wondering, if maybe, you know, the way we have two world wars, if there's, you know, Clone Wars, the Clone War and the Second Clone War, you know.
I could see that.
And I'm right there with you, Steve. I mean, I thought with Ahsoka alone that we could see something go beyond Order 66, kind of find out where she went. I mean, the best way to hide her is to give us her mission. You know, the whole mission becomes more about how maybe she becomes a dark apprentice or maybe she goes on the run. I mean, there's a couple different ways you could go with that, but they would all require you going past Order 66.
Yeah, that would be very interesting to see if the Clone Wars series does not end with Ahsoka's death, but rather her disappearance or supposed death. That could be very interesting.
Yeah, it's a thing where, I don't know, I don't necessarily... Here's the thing with Ahsoka is I don't want to see her die, and I don't want to see her go to the dark side. I don't think they're setting her up for a dark side fall at all, which only leads one other possibility, you know, in my mind, and I hate the idea of having to watch Ahsoka die. But I'm afraid it's going to happen, a la Optimus Prime in the 80s. I don't think you guys were there, but I was, and that was a dark time for childhood.
Hard.
It was a dark time for children everywhere. So I don't know if we're going to get some of that action or what's going to happen. Speaking of death, and I put this in our little Skype chat down here, I don't want to gloss over the death of Captain Tarples this past season.
Yes, I've seen that,
There was the one episode where Jar Jar got to impersonate the boss.
Yeah.
And
the new boss.
Yeah, yeah. And
that was a fantastic episode. I
like
that. That one I really
enjoyed.
And I think that
Riley, we lost you, man.
Riley, kiss that
microphone.
You on Bethany's
mic. Yeah,
kiss that microphone, Riley. Kiss that microphone.
Well played,
sir. I can steal jokes too. But no, in that one episode, it was like more than ever, they show you how the Gungans deserve respect. You know, they're not just a throwaway race of a bunch of clumsy Jar Jar Binkses, that they are actually you know, a noble race. And Tarples embodied that when he went up against, and they took down Grievous, for crying out loud.
Tarples definitely sacrificed himself. He made a choice to die in order to capture Grievous because he thought it had a good chance of bringing the war closer to an end. And he died with honor.
Yeah.
Yes. Tarples, the Jar Jar that could have been.
Yeah. Well, and the Gungans, I never saw the Gungans as a race to be the kind of goofy way that I think the media and geek pop culture has caricatured them. And there's just this automatic Jar Jar thing that I think... I think
one being screwed it up for the entire race.
Something like that. Where it's really at this point, it's almost old. I think not just to us, but to many people. I think the Jar Jar jokes are beginning to fall flat. At least I hope so by now.
Well, me and my dad were talking about this, watching it the other day, and you know, even if they'd have done the little whiskers or something on Jar Jar to make him look a little cooler, I think people would have swallowed it better. But it, like you mentioned, it's funny, though, that the entire race gets the Jar Jar-ism. I mean, Tarples was a perfect example of what the race normal looked like. And I love that character. I mean, all the way through it, I was like, yeah, now this guy I'd like to see a little more of. I was kind of bummed to see him pass away.
Yeah. And the Gungans were not just in that episode, but in the previous episode, Water War, or one of the previous episodes, shown to be a very formidable force against the droid armies as a military. So... yeah. Captain Tarples, you're something big doo doo now.
Yeah. Captain Tarples, we hardly knew thee.
Yeah,
there's so much. Like, we barely touched on the Mandalorian arc with the return of Lux and the water episodes there at the beginning of the season.
There's so much to talk about this season. I am interested in this. What was your favorite arc? I'll start with you, Mark.
Oh, it's the Krell, hands down Krell. You know, all four of them were great. I love the clone aspect the most. I mean, I was right there with Steve. I wanted to love Krell when I first saw all this stuff. I was like, oh, it's everything Darth Maul could have been. And, you know, then I started seeing Twitter and I'm just like, oh, this can't be good. Oh, no, please, no. And then I'm watching it and I'm like, oh, come on, please have a redeeming quality. By the time I got to the third episode, it was pretty obvious this guy was a total bag of something. And so I was just like, all right, how are they going to do this? Is he going to be like some of the other characters we've seen in the Dark Horse Republic line? And in the end, they kind of went that route. And I thought they did a good job. At first, I was like, oh, this kind of played out. They've done that before. But the way they did it worked so well that I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was, as I said, that was one of my favorites, but not my favorite, but I'll keep you guys in suspense a minute longer. Teresa, what was yours? You'll have to not type it, though. Oh, okay, jumping over to Bethany then.
Okay, hang on, I'm here.
No, sorry. She's here. Okay.
My favorite episode, or my favorite arc, was actually not the Darth Maul stuff. It was actually the opening arc with Water War and the Gungan attack, and on Mon Calamari.
Oh, what did you like about that made it your favorite?
I loved the way that it looked. I loved the art. I loved the characters. I loved learning more about the different species that are on Mon Calamari. I loved their whole dynamic. I just liked that whole, you know,
ba-dum,
storytelling.
Ba-dum.
Ba-dum. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, yours, Bethany. I'm trying to make the round to see that actually surprised me a little bit, Teresa, because a lot of people I heard like I think it was on the Forcecast where Jimmy and Jason were talking about it and I remember being surprised because after all this hype and all these strings left untied, all these plot threads that were open from season 3 and they opened with a brand new one, I think threw some people off. But you know, looking back, that was a pretty good set of episodes. Bethany, mm-hmm. What was your favorite?
I did really like the Umbara arc, and I do think it could have been possibly cut down to 3 episodes, but I did like the arc nonetheless. It was very interesting to see a character like that who you see him at first as that heroic general that's brash but brave, and
kind of
to see him really just turn bad.
I was just pleased because he was such a jerk. I mean, he was about as mean as it gets, where I'm thinking, good grief, why don't the clones just shoot him? But, you know, not knowing at all.
And they did.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ask
and you shall receive.
Exactly.
If I can count all four last episodes as an arc, though, since technically
that's
it's counted
what they said.
As an arc,
that's what they said. Yeah.
Then I think that may be my favorite, though, because so much happened in that time. There is so much character developed on, and frankly, Sam Witwer as Darth Maul is incredibly freaky.
Yeah, yeah.
Very appropriate for the role.
I'll jump over to Steve. Of all of season four, what was your favorite arc?
As far as an episode goes, I absolutely loved Revenge. The arc wasn't my favorite, but Revenge as a season finale was outstanding. But as far as an arc goes, I love the was his name Rako Hardeen that Obi-Wan was in person?
Yeah.
Yes.
I absolutely loved every bit of that arc. There wasn't a low moment in that. Even the episode with the box that seemed to just be kind of a filler in that thing. I loved that episode. I loved the way that Obi-Wan was in a position where he had to appear evil or bad, but was, you know, still had to stay true to his moral character and stuff. So that was probably my favorite arc of them all.
Yeah.
That's
what I
want
to throw out there, what Steven mentioned. What's your favorite episode by itself? Because like Bethany, I wouldn't necessarily, well, I'm against Bethany, but with Bethany on the last ones being an arc,
Massacre
would be my standalone episode. But I wouldn't go and say that arc for me was better than the general one. But I absolutely think that Massacre episode stood by itself above the rest for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. If I was to do my favorite arc and episode, it would actually be the two-part season finale. And that's where I'm very glad that I wasn't. It's interesting because this happens all the time, and I'm realizing I think I'm going to approach season five a little bit different, where I'm going to kind of stay away from the internet commentary, blogosphere, and social networks when it comes to the instant reactions, you know, those 10 minutes after the episode airs reactions, because I realize I can't help but prejudge the episode if I read someone's opinion. It's just, I guess, human nature. And so that didn't happen with the last two part, and I actually thoroughly enjoyed the exploration of Savage Opress, and actually really loved the planet and the aesthetic and the slow but suspenseful build up to the reveal of Crazy Maul. And I thought Morley the Snake, I thought had a place there. I do really
kill
feel
it.
He was like the Gollum to Darth Maul Shelob. He played that kind of archetypal minion character who's all he's doing is trying to lure in prey for Darth Maul to devour. And that's serious stuff. I mean, that's not kiddie stuff at all.
I guess. He was just more of kind of like this annoying little thing that I just was like, thank God.
And see, and that's what the instant reaction was, but I didn't see that. I actually watched the episode having not read that reaction. So I do find myself rather alone, I think, on that opinion.
No, I was Return of the King in it up that whole episode. I was like, oh, this is totally Shelob's lair.
Yeah. Well, We're running into our hour, and I want to save some time. After the break, I say after the break, like we're a radio show.
I did want to say something else. Okay. We were speaking of death earlier, like Steve mentioning not really wanting to see Ahsoka turn to the dark side or die. And I kind of wonder, is this show going to continue growing up with its audience? Because some of these episodes in season four were quite serious.
Yes, they were.
Even more serious than some season three episodes, which were more serious than season two. And so we see this show getting progressively more serious and definitely starting to push that PG rating
maturing.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
It's definitely maturing.
Both in quality and in content in terms of...
Yeah, I'm wondering, is that going to continue? Are we going to see more Captain Tarpol's deaths in this show?
I think you're going to continue. I think you're going to continue to see what it's been since season one, and that is a mixture of both these dark episodes and then ones that are very much more kid friendly. I think that I think that's been a staple of the show since season one. You know, it opened with an episode like Ambush with a lighthearted, you know, fun Yoda, and there was some adventure in there and everything. And then you turn around a few episodes later and you get Rookies. you know, which has, you know, which, you know, some parents wouldn't let their kids watch at all. And I can't say that I blame them, but, and so I think you're going to continue to get a mixture of those things.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, let's end with this. One thing my favorite thing to do is speculation, so that I know I'll be wrong in that. And, you know, 6 months when Celebration happens, I'll be proved wrong. But I'd love to ask, what is one thing that you see coming that you think other people might not? If you're just to speculate something that might come out of left field for season 5, I know we're waiting for the Darth Maul stuff, the Asajj Ventress stuff, but what's a place you think that we might not see? What's an interesting piece of speculation? I'll just throw that to you, Mark, to start us off, to wrap up.
That we won't see? I bet we won't see.
No. I should say
Ball talk.
That we'll see that the fans don't see coming, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
Oh, well, I would like to see that we probably won't see is the Slave One. I'd like to see Boba Fett actually working on it, maybe, or get it back from, you know, certain bounty hunter that stole it from him last season.
Yeah, I guess we have kind of, as fans, left the Boba Fett story behind a little bit, at least in our consciousness. So, yeah, that might show up. Teresa?
I'm still thinking. Somebody else
could. you realize that we'll all come up with the best ideas first. And that,
no, so see, I'm creative, so y'all go ahead.
All right, so I'll just...
Wow.
I'll Teresa just embarrass myself. Then. Down. Exactly. I'll just embarrass myself then. One thing I think that we won't see coming, and that is the significance. We've talked about the underworld, but what I think is that Clone Wars in Season 5 and then beyond is going to really delve into the underworld elements that it's only really barely touched on. And I think that's really going to become a big staple of the show in a way that we don't even really yet realize. And that is, it will kind of take over the role of what the live-action series would have been, if not possibly go into mature and kind of rebrand as an animated series in that timeline. That could be fascinating. And I would, you know, I wouldn't be too terribly surprised, but it would be kind of out there.
You stole mine.
All right. Mission accomplished.
Steve, no. You go ahead while I think of another one.
Okay. All right. I think we're going to see more Yoda. He's been kind of not very active, and I think we're going to see a little more activity from him. In fact, this is my prediction. I predict that the final 10 minutes of each episode of The Clone Wars are going to be, the actual stories will be cut in half, and the final 10 minutes will be a Cooking with Yoda segment every week.
You heard it with here. When 900 old years old you are.
Cook is good, you will not.
Cook is good.
Place the bouillon in the tub, you will.
Snake stew. And now, more snake I can't even do it because I'm laughing. And now more snake stew.
Good food. My turn. I go.
And Julia Child will be a special guest star.
Well, no, that'll be when Yaddle comes in. Yaddle comes in speaking like her.
Yeah.
With this rook, we're temperature 45 degrees.
Oh my goodness.
That's exactly what we don't Yariel Poof sounds just like Robot Chicken, and Yaddle sounds just like Julia Child. You heard it here first. All right, Teresa or Bethany, whichever's ready first.
Okay. I actually think we could see some more development in the Jedi Order and how the Jedi Order runs itself and how it brings up its younglings, which would be interesting.
Yeah.
I like it.
You stole my second one.
And then we could have like a little glowing force ghost of Jacen Solo standing in the background flow walking. That'd be awesome. No, I don't think that'd be good.
And Bethany, you're on the spot.
Well, Teresa stole my second one. So, yes. But I do have one thought that is, I think that we will have another surprising addition to the way we view the Force. I think we may revisit some Mortis type storytelling and sort of just revisit that aspect of the Force.
Yes. I could see that happening. You know, Mortis has really been I don't think it's just going to be a one-time thing. I think we will see more
Mortis. I just
Mortis
have this
before.
Little feeling that something will come back sometime.
Yeah.
Maybe mommy's sitting there going, where's my family?
Hmm.
The mother.
Not that mother. No, not that mother. Oh my goodness. Well, it's been a fun, very speculation heavy episode of the Star Wars Report, but I had a fantastic time doing that. Steve, Teresa, thank you so much for coming on this episode. We really appreciate you guys taking some time with us.
Thank you.
No
I enjoyed
problem.
It.
It's fun.
It's always I'll tell you what. We'll have to do this more often. We'll have to do this more often. Whenever we finally get a trailer, I keep complaining about it, but whenever we do finally get a trailer for the Clone Wars Season 5, we'll have to do another round table and see how much of our speculation was dead wrong. Although I do like the cooking idea. If you want to contact us, you can do so. Well, the best way to really find all that stuff is just StarWarsReport.com. That's a great place to find our email address, which is StarWarsReport@gmail.com, Twitter.com/StarWarsReport, say it every week, Facebook.com/StarWarsReport. Hey, hit us up with some iTunes reviews. We always appreciate folks letting the world know that they're tuning into our podcast each week, and we do appreciate you guys for doing that. Wow. I'll tell you what. Crazy times here at the Star Wars Report. Stick around. After the credits, we're going to do something new here. We talked about it in the pre-show on the station, but Bethany and I are going to do a little review of the Hunger Games movie. We went and saw it last Friday. And for you podcast listeners, if you want to, just stick around after the end music and hear us talk some non-Star Wars stuff, but some stuff that's at the top of our minds this week. And if you're just a Star Wars type of guy or gal, you can tune out and tune in next week. But if you guys like that idea, we might do it even more often. Have to do an Avengers roundtable. Steve, would you come for an Avengers roundtable?
Geek Out Loud should host that.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll rudely invite myself then.
All right. There you go.
No. Steve, we're going through a big project. We're trying to catch up with all the Marvel movies. And so far, we've got Thor and Iron Man. So we only need Iron Man 2, Captain America, Incredible Hulk. Am I missing anything?
No. The only ones you need, this is what you need to watch. You need to go Iron Man 2, Incredible Hulk, Thor, Captain America.
All right. I think we can get that before May. I think so. We got a good month. We can do that. And so, yeah, we'll stick around. We'll be talking some Hunger Games. Once again, guys, thanks again for coming on. It's always a pleasure, and we'll have to have you guys back on real soon.
All right, sounds great.
Sure thing. And again, Teresa, you can find her website,
fangirlnextdoor.com.
.com.
There you go.
Thank you. And Steve, you host the Big Honkin' Show, and you also host Geek Out Loud. That's at geekoutonline.com. We always enjoy listening to your snippets and your hearkening back and your transitional phrases and all that fun stuff. So good times. Everyone should definitely tune in to both of those podcasts. Teresa does a podcast too. So yeah.
I do.
Yeah. So awesome stuff. Again, thanks for tuning in to the 39th episode of the Star Wars Report. That's it. We're out of here. So long, folks. And remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
Bye.
And Yoda's cooking show.
And
that too. All right. Thanks, guys, again for coming on. We really appreciate it. I always have fun talking to fellow podcasters. That's always a good times.
Always fun.
Good times to be had by all. I guess we'll do it. We'll let you guys go. We'll talk to you soon. And on the interwebs, Teresa and Steve will be talking to you guys soon.
All right. Thanks
good.
A lot. Teresa,
thanks
good to meet
thanks
you.
Again, guys.
It was nice to meet you too, Steve.
All right. We'll see you guys.
Talk
farewell.
To you
farewell. Had so much fun.
See ya, Steve. Oh, he hung up. He's got to tune into the podcast version. Thea Thebe. I didn't quite get it in time. Let's talk some Hunger Games. This is something we're going to kind of try to do, as I say, each week. And if you guys like it in the chat, ask questions. We've done it off recording before, but you know the recorder's still going, and we got a good 15 minutes till the next show starts. So
it is an after show in which we can talk about pretty much whatever we feel like. And
pretty much.
Since we saw the Hunger Games, we're going
to
talk
about
that.
We're too lazy to start another podcast, so we can just kind of talk about whatever. And so last week we had a great experience. I really enjoyed. We went to the rave in Chattanooga and saw the Hunger Games. Packed house. Packed house. As a matter of fact, we were driving up I-75. I don't know why I just became Irish. We were driving driving up 75 Garden North to the rave theater. And we saw the Hunger Games. And like I said, the showing we actually wanted to go, I looked up on the website. We got there 15 minutes, 20 minutes before the showing, and it had just sold out.
Yep.
I was like, no. So we had to kill time for about...
There were only two seats left, and three of us wanted to go.
We had to kill time for about 45 minutes, and that's what we did. We you know, killed the time, hung around. I did some thrift store shopping. Good time.
That's some solidarity. I'm surprised you guys didn't go short straw.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You get to go to the late showing. But it was... I guess... I don't even know where to begin. It was good experience, packed house, but we got plenty early to the next showing, so we got our seats and got good ones right in the middle of the theater.
I got a question for you both real fast.
Sure, go for it.
I haven't seen it, so you guys have read the book too, is that correct?
Well, it's a deck of cards. I'm one side, Bethany's the other. Bethany's read the books, and I have not.
Okay, so one of you got a lot more out of this movie than the other,
probably,
I would assume.
Probably. At least I feel that way, but yeah, I remember.
Well, we shall see.
The theater opened up and had this like really fuzzy, odd, static on it, and I was really disappointed. But fortunately, when the trailer started up, once it got past the local ads and the local insurance and lawyer if you break your neck ads, you know, all the typical stuff, it got into the trailers. Started off with the Twilight Breaking Dawn teaser.
They were calling that a trailer. That's
it's like less than a minute long. It's not,
it was about
it's not
13
a trailer.
Seconds.
No. It was like 50 seconds. Because I looked it up on YouTube. It seemed okay. Short though, because it was literally.
Well, there
the reason
15
I bring it up,
seconds of the logo.
Yeah, the reason I bring it up. This is by no means going to be like some kind of in-depth character analysis of the Hunger Games or anything. But the one thing that's really been going around the blogs and the news sites and stuff is that like the Hunger Games is the anti-Twilight. Like you have a strong, convicted, smart, intelligent, physically capable, bright, but coming from a poor background. Yeah, basically the hero's journey, but as applied to a female lead. That is not swooning over some guy. That is not. They're saying that Katniss is the anti-Bella, and Twilight. Excuse me, The Hunger Games is the anti-Twilight. So I'll ask you, Bethany. You've read the books. I know you haven't read the Twilight books. I think you actually tried once.
I did start the Twilight series once when it was pretty new. I heard all these people talking about
initial
it. I was like,
hype.
What is this? What is this? So I picked it up and read about the first 50 pages of a several hundred page long book. And
sparkling vampires, no!
Yeah. I didn't specifically mind the sparkles, but it was an odd series, and I didn't particularly like it very much. And I had a hard time getting into it in that Bella was a very uninteresting character to me, because most of the book that I was reading up to that point was inner monologue about how much her life was not great to live. And then after she met Edward, it was inner monologue about how she was thinking about Edward and how Edward looked,
kind of
what Edward thought about her. And was she upset?
How far did you get into the book?
With her?
How far did you get into the book before you had to drop it?
About 50 pages.
Really?
50 pages, one paragraph, one half a sentence, and four words.
Okay,
yeah,
okay. Well, I say all that because, is it true? Would you agree with those statements that Katniss is the anti-Bella?
From what I've seen, and I've seen portions of the Twilight movies, just, they've been on here and there, and trailers and clips here and there everywhere, and in-depth reviews, but...
I forgot to play the Hunger Games music. Oh, well.
Bella seems very fixed on the guys in her life. She's always thinking about Edward, always thinking about Jacob.
So
occasionally does she think about either of her parents.
Likely sacrificing her life to save her younger sister from a dreadful fate was not really Bella in Bella's.
No, she kid. Wants to have herself killed so she can be with her boyfriend for all time. I'm with Lane in the chat. It's not a good. I've watched the movies. I haven't read the Twilight books, but every time I watch it, I don't want my daughter being near it. I just like this is not at all what I think teen girls should be seeing as a healthy relationship.
Yeah, no, not. And so jumping into the Hunger Games. I'll just give my overall thoughts right at the beginning. Good movie. It was definitely a good movie. It's not like my new amazing thing, 5 stars, and I'm going to read all the books and buy all the memorabilia. Mm-hmm. But it was a good movie, and those are rare in theaters these days. Let me be honest. I mean, storytelling on the big screen has been somewhat lackluster, I think, in recent years.
Yeah, there have been some good flicks, but something I really liked about this movie that I know everyone online has been saying this pretty much, at least most people, most individuals have gone on Twitter, go on Facebook, go on geek blogs, review blogs, that sort of thing, have said that Katniss is a very strong female character who doesn't have to bare skin or have her shirt torn in specific ways during action sequences.
Star Wars is guilty. Star Wars is guilty.
Hey!
But
it's true.
Basically that you approach Katniss with the idea that she is a character and a person, not that she is a female action star, girl power, or sexy person, or Mary Sue of power and awesomeness.
Exactly.
She can't take down the whole horde of bad guys with one hand.
What's fascinating about this movie is that it's very mainstream, and I'll just say it broke all kinds of records for when it was released. It's the all-time third highest grossing opening weekend ever, behind The Dark Knight and the last Harry Potter movie. It's mainstream, and it's a very popular movie, especially among women, but also among men. It's about a 60-40 ratio, mm-hmm. is what I was reading.
It's evened out slightly since then as well.
Unlike Star Wars, which is primarily a male audience.
And unlike Twilight, which is primarily female.
Exactly. So it actually almost hit the middle pretty well. And I think it's just very nice to see a film coming from Hollywood that actually treats women, quite frankly, in a somewhat respectful light, where it's not the opposite Underworld or Kill Bill version of where you have to, I guess what you're saying previously, but it's not the
she's a realistic character, and she has good qualities and bad, and she's portrayed very realistically. She's not eye candy. She's not a Mary Sue of perfection and honesty and valor and beauty and strength and wisdom and et cetera, you know, all that stuff. But something that more mainstream reviews have said is that Jennifer Lawrence, essentially, who played Katniss,
oh boy,
is too fat. And
yep.
That quote, they've called her big bone. They've said that she has baby fat.
This is painful. You know, me and Bethany Riley, we were talking about this before, because I don't want to be pessimistic here. I saw the trailers and I was like, what's so special about this? And I look on Twitter and I'm watching Twitter blow up. You know, people are just like, oh, this is going to be great. This is going to be awesome. And I'm like, okay, what are they seeing in this trailer that I'm missing? And then I went and I saw the wiki for the books. And I read through that, and I was just like, okay, now that sounds interesting. And like I was telling Bethany in the chat before we started the shows, they haven't done that with the trailer. They haven't really captured the essence of what it is. Or if they do, they do it only in image, and they never really get the point across to you if you're completely new to it. So it's like
the trailers weren't that great.
Yeah, so basically what I think I'm coming at is, Bethany, if you could capture this in a really quick trailer, how would you describe the movie?
If I had a minute and a half to describe the movie, I would show a good bit of the... I would show some character interaction, like between Katniss and Peeta, Katniss and Rue,
friends. Excuse the interjection, but who I was convinced that they were just doing the lofty British pronunciation of Peeta the whole movie.
Peeta.
Oh, sorry, continue.
And so I would have shown action sequences like from the from different parts of the movies, but I feel like the trailers that they did release were too cut together, and that it would be scene flash, maybe half a line of dialogue, scene flash, and, you know, just that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, the other side of it is, okay, we've seen movies like Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now we got Twilight. Would you say it's really close to the books, or it's close in parts and misses the mark in others? I mean, you know, we've got some that are just completely terrible. And then we got some like Lord of the Rings where, you know, yeah, they had to twist some things, but for the most part, they did a really good job. I mean, how would you describe it?
I would say they captured the essence of the book. They did keep it less violent. And because
we kind of had to,
if you completely translated the book to screen, it probably would have been R-rated. But the essence of the book itself wasn't R-rated because it's a book.
Yeah,
it's not showing things visually.
It's all very clever portrayals of the violence. It would be blurry in the background in the way that.
But I would say it definitely captured the spirit and the character of the book in ways it was better, in ways it wasn't quite as good. But I felt it did capture that. But I did want to go back to, guys, Jennifer Lawrence is not fat. She is not overweight.
Here we
go. And if you want your silly little skinny stars to fill all of these roles in movies that don't perform as well,
yeah,
let me tell you this. This is the third largest grossing box office hit behind a Harry Potter movie and Batman The Dark Knight. Both of those movies were sequels. They had already built an audience. This is the first movie to have... this is the biggest box office grossing movie that isn't built on other movies.
At least here in the U.S. in the opening weekend.
And it definitely came out of nowhere.
Similarly, it's the first movie of its kind that has a main female character in an action movie that is portrayed in that simplistic character sense. She's not a superstar. She's not a supermodel, and she doesn't have superpowers.
What we're going to have to do is jump off about now from the live show, but we're going to continue. This is like so many teases. Stay after the break. Stay after the end credits. Now stay after the after show. And for you live listeners, we've got Patreon's Club coming up next, as I understand. I believe.
Yes.
They are? Okay. They're probably actually getting ready for the show now. So I'm going to stop hijacking their broadcast and because they come on in about 2 minutes here. We'll hop out and continue our discussion and wrap it up. Bethany, you can revisit the disgusting chauvinism of the modern American media.
I didn't say right that.
Put the episode title. Bethany said. No. All right. So
I was a witness to it. Oh, I was.
Exactly. So for you live listeners, thank you so much for tuning in every week. Evangelize. Tell the people. We do it every Thursday night, 8 o'clock. And thank you for tuning in. Tell the pita.
It was great chatting with all of you folks in the chat room.
Sure thing.
We will see you on the other side.
See you very soon.
Don't worry, we're still cloning Bothans.
All right, disconnected, and I have to get to that. Restart the station.
Basically, here's my point with that.
All right.
Jennifer Lawrence may not be Angelina Jolie, but you know what made...
She may not be Jessica Alba. She may not be...
Angelina Jolie trended on Twitter because of how thin she was and because she struck a interesting pose
the Oscars.
At the Oscars.
Yeah.
And very few people realistically appear that way, and if you do, sometimes you may be underweight, and I don't know. I recently saw a post on Fernacular's Tumblr account, and this is a female comic book fan who said, "Guys, this is how I feel as a female reading comic books." And she drew a bunch of pictures of the male superheroes.
I saw this.
In with their outfits turned rather female looking.
Like the unitards and
yes.
Exactly.
Skin tight clothing, cut off in certain places.
Think Dwayne Johnson in what was that movie? In the Game Plan. In the ballerina outfit style.
Yeah. Anyway,
it's true. So, it's so true. And it's so, I mean, obvious, and it's so accepted. That's, I think, what's so sad about it.
I get tired of people, guys and sometimes girls, saying that, you know, that why do you find a superhero's costume sexist? Or, you know, that it's gotten a lot better recently. I don't get why you're upset at all. And I would say that the sexual portrayal of characters in movies and comic books has definitely upped for both male and females mm-hmm. as characters. But I would say that there's definitely more of it for the female character. One reason I liked this post of the male superheroes in female costumes was because it shows so obviously, suddenly, we're not used to seeing a guy look like that. And when you see that costume on a guy, you're like, what on earth? Ah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And
but it's been normal since the days of Wonder Woman. I mean,
yeah,
it's been here for forever. So I think it's accepted in modern pop culture as normal. And I think that might change it. You know, it just lifts my spirit to see the American public embrace a movie like The Hunger Games, where
yeah,
it's
and
it's,
most
it's
of these
not that.
Most of these critics were the New York Times blog. Huh. And other
you mean
mainstream...
the newspaper that's going out of business or that's
yes.
losing subscribers?
Case
that newspaper.
In point. These aren't your average people who have some common sense, are pretty ingrained into the culture and know it. These are people who expect movies to be as they've always been. Yeah. And that's just not the case anymore.
Nope.
True to that.
Yeah.
Another troubling trend I've seen is fans, and these are more fans instead of big sites, but Hunger Games fans who are upset that the characters of Rue and Senna were
that's
black.
A whole nother topic. Yeah, yeah. The
it's like, really, guys?
Racist.
They were dark skinned in the books,
racist.
Very obviously. And so you're saying the Hunger Games movie ruined everything and wasn't like the book
what?
Because these two characters were black? And because it focused
instead
attention
instead of being
on them?
Dark-skinned, how? Wait,
they thought that they apparently they have no reading comprehension skills because they thought they should be white like the books, which they were.
Well, I mean, I guess I could see it like if you're in one of those half asleep and it's like some of the EU novels where, you know, it's just a one line reference to a character being a dark skin tone and they never ever mention it again. I might forgive that ignorance, but. Come on, if a character is described dark-skinned, I mean, gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
I
even pictured them that way when I read the books.
Hmm.
So I thought, oh, wow, yeah, they got it right on. And they even got actors who look like I imagined the people in the book. I was thinking that, too. I guess one thing that really appealed to me in this movie was it's definitely a post-apocalyptic dystopian type film and series of books.
Can I say something real quick?
Yes.
Okay. As that guy, the guy who didn't read the book, I felt like I was missing something, which I probably obviously was, because you can never get everything from the book into the movie, but I just didn't really get a sense of the severity of the Hunger Games. I had to fill in a lot of blanks, I guess is what I'm trying to say, where I felt like I was like, well, I'm assuming since it's the Hunger Games, that means that it has to do with what districts actually get a food supply, and I have to make that assumption. I'm not even sure that's true. Is that true? Is that how it works?
Not entirely.
Is it to honor the gift from the government of food or something like that? Or what is the Hunger Games? Because that was I think they got a little lost in the big picture where mm-hmm. they showed a brief thing where when one of the main characters died.
If I may say, though, they did explain that in the opening text that we three actually missed part of. So if you're in the movie theater, missed part of that.
So we missed the opening crawl, is what you're trying to say.
So it's kind of like,
going
the Kingdom
into Star
of Heaven,
movie.
Where you got all that information coming right at you, and if you miss it, you're kind of like, wait a minute, what's going on here?
I haven't seen that, but it's a little akin to Star Wars. If you miss the opening crawl, or even half of the opening crawl at the beginning of
the
movie,
period.
You're going to be slightly confused.
Rebel spaceships striking from a hidden base have won their first victory. Against the evil Galactic Empire. During the Battle of Rebels. Okay.
But I guess to say one reason why I really like this book series and movie is because the characters, while in a setting that is very unusual, you know, we don't find that setting in everyday life, and they're in a gladiatorial type arena, but the characters are, they're smart. Some of them are quite handsome and good looking, and some of them have been really well trained in areas, but they're all rather normal. It's kind of like, what would you do if you were thrown into a scenario like that? And Katniss is already a hunter. She hunts to essentially to get food for her family and trade food so that her family can buy other items.
And wasn't she volunteered to join the games. Wasn't it like her sister or something that got picked?
Yeah.
Her sister was the one who's picked. So Katniss volunteered. She went into as a hunter, and she was already pretty fit because she spent a lot of time out in the woods. So she has some survival skills and knowledge and isn't just magically great at everything. But she's also not incredibly stupid either. But the characters feel very real. And that's one thing that I think the movie definitely capitalized on. And that's one reason why, Riley, I think your complaint of not really being able to see the big picture of the movie much, because you're seeing it from the character's point of view. And
that's an interesting point.
I dislike it when people complain about, oh, well, so-and-so was overweight in the movie, or she didn't look, quote, hungry enough to play in the Hunger Games. Ha 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 ha.
Is that how they were coming at it?
Yeah.
That was the disguise, yes.
And wow. Or these characters are black and it ruined the movie for me. No, these are realistic characters. They're not supposed to be super thin models of perfection that we all wish to be. And I hope all of us don't wish to be that, but that in ways we want to emulate just because they're kind of the Western ideal of perfection.
Western. I'm tired of that. It's not the Western idea. It's Hollywood, okay? That's LA. That's actually from where I'm at. That's South. That's not West.
I actually mean Western as in the Western portion of the world. The East version. Okay. The East version.
But the bottom line is it all comes back to Hollywood. It's all Hollywood and New York's fault. Everywhere there's a recording studio and you're recording some little twig and you're saying that that is healthy, it is your fault.
Yep. And that's why you have things pop up like Thinspiration or Thinspo. We may leave that out of this discussion, but there is definitely an impact on the public and a negative impact at that.
Well, and an impact on a young girl's perception of what is beautiful, and that's
what
so
is healthy.
Wrong.
And
so
scary.
It's scary, and that's why I love this movie. It just made a statement in areas that I enjoyed, even if there were even if the cinematography was all Bourne-like and very shaky, and even if it didn't have enough of a big musical score. There are little complaints that I had for it here and there, but I overall enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, let's round out through our last thoughts because we do have some feedback. And I had to push it off from the main show, but it will stick around and read our
three
different...
Well, maybe don't read all of it, because we have several, I think.
Okay, let's read the first two, then. Sounds like a good idea.
Sure thing.
Let's do that. So let's round out with final thoughts. So as I was saying, Hunger Games, I gave it a solid 4 out of 5, and I'm intrigued, because I don't think there was enough information for the non-book readers out there to really allude to what's going to happen next. So I really have no idea. It could go anywhere. I'm really hoping to see a zoomed out picture of the of the rebellion against the capital system.
And the first book really had the time to delve into that.
And having grown up overseas as a missionary kid, it's different to where I have lived in a country where all wealth and property and anything of value is sucked out of the outer skirts of the country into the capital where the wealthy and privileged
literally
live.
Into the capital.
Like, you think it's bad in the United States in our political atmosphere, but I mean it's much worse in other third world countries, and that's kind of what the Hunger Games alluded to. So that really resonated with me. So I it's a solid movie, and I'm looking forward to the sequels whenever they come.
See, I can believe that. When I went to the Bahamas, when you got off the main strip where all the tourist action was, it was the proverbial third world country. It was like, whoa, how come you never see this in a brochure? Well, because they don't want the tourists to see this, And I haven't seen it yet. I like I said, the trailer didn't really do it for me, but the wiki did, and everybody's talk about it has me interested. I didn't get to see Red Tails in theaters, so I know I'm not going to be able to see this in theater. I'm going to have to wait. So there's a side of me that's like trying not to get pessimistic because everybody's talking about how great it is, and I just can't see it. And so, you're just like,
well,
after a while.
That harkens back to our to our discussion about the Clone Wars, and when you have five different trailers for something and you hype it up as Darth Maul returns, Darth Maul returns.
The return
Darth
of Darth Maul. Maul.
Did you know revenge. Darth Maul comes back for, guess what?
We will start with
And then what, Darth
revenge.
Maul doesn't show up until the end two episodes, and everybody's kind of like, I thought he was coming earlier. You get expectations set, and then you get disappointed when something different happens, even if it's something good. If it's just different, you get disappointed because you expected something and it didn't happen.
Well, and that's just it. It's the expectations, and I think for me with a movie like this, I'm more coming at it from a father perspective. I'm more, you know, I hear all these great things about the characters and what it can do for girls, and now that I have two now instead of just one. That's important. I mean, you know, I say this on our Star Wars podcast all the time about how they need more Star Wars action figures like Barriss, like Luminari. You know, we've got Ahsoka who could have some more outfits. Asajj could have some more outfits. Why aren't they doing it? Why aren't they pushing that? And that's one of the things that I'm always looking for now. I mean, if it's something that my daughter should be watching or shouldn't. I mean, my wife watches some shows that I watch with her, and I'm like, I don't want her daughter watching this, you know, because I just – some of the morals that are just being ignored are, to me, vital in kids' lives today. And so a movie where I'm hearing all these good things, it makes me excited in that regard.
One thing I would say about The Hunger Games is it's very serious. It deals with serious topics. It's definitely not a movie for the young ones.
Yeah.
It pushed the PG-13, and it did definitely have some thematic material. Just, I mean, it's kids killing kids, if you want to be technically
brutally honest.
Yeah. You want to be completely brutally honest. And Katniss, though, is a character that is very interesting, as well as Peeta. Both are very realistic, likable characters. Both have their strengths and weaknesses.
Definitely. And we'll be right back talking with some emails and Facebook posts and feedback. All kinds of awesome stuff.
Yeah, I'm full.
All right. Some feedback. Now it's time for feedback. We need feedback music. We have something to report. No, wait. That's the wrong segment. You want to start
anyway,
off? Anyway,
okay. From Facebook, do you remember when Brian V. Klein told us about the guy he got hooked on Star Wars with Darth Plagueis? He got him to start reading Darth Plagueis?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he writes back to tell us.
Follow up.
Just finished listening to last week's podcast. Great episode as usual. I just wanted to follow up on the feedback segment where you read my post about my converted, quote, hater friend. I think I have created a monster in a good way. He's been reading about two books or so a week now. After the Thrawn trilogy, I gave him the Sith novelization, then the Blackfeet Fleet Crisis trilogy, and then the Jedi Academy trilogy, and I Jedi, since they overlap. And he's been
good, man.
He's been just enjoying them like crazy. I've been compiling a list for him since I own all the books, and I'm truly excited to see his reactions to each new book he reads. And he questions me about the content quite often, so this whole journey of discovery of his is actually helping me because it has reminded me of some of the aspects of these books that I love, but that I've forgotten. So all in all, a very rewarding experience for both of us.
Yeah.
And by the way, Bethany, you did pronounce my name correctly.
All right.
Keep up the great work. May the Force be with you.
Another Facebook post comes from Charles. He says, just listened to your latest show. First timer here, but you guys recently followed me on Twitter. And I have to say thanks because it opened up the door for more Star Wars content. I love listening to all the different points of view and especially enjoy the podcast personalities picking out one another's brains. Very cool stuff. On the topic of Star Wars games, I definitely agree with you guys. LucasArts needs to start coming out with some serious titles. I mean, enough with the Lego stuff. Enough's enough. So I definitely hope the Battlefront rumor is true. And he actually linked to a post that he did to the LucasArts forums. And we'll throw a link to that in the show notes. Let's make a note there. Also, I'm actually going to read one last email really quick. That's going to be... I have to set it up. And see, it's the after show. Nobody's listening now anyway. And of course, it's a pre-roll ad. Oh, The Amazing Spider-Man. I forgot about that. That's coming up this summer. All right, I guess you have the pre-roll ad. Here we go. I have it appropriately set up now. We have an email from Jesse, once again, faithful Star Wars Report listener. I just realized I have that music up way too loud, don't I? All right. It's good music, though. All right. Hello, guys. Long time no talk. Here's some things that I find inspiring about Star Wars. He's referencing Bethany's request from last week. It says, the throne room ending. No matter how crazy your day went, you can keep your you want to keep your cool and come home alive. So that's all I got to do right now. But I'm pretty sleepy. But before I leave, I'd like to ask you guys a question. If you had one choice of force power, whether it be good or bad, what would you choose? As for me, it doesn't matter. Sith power all the way. Thank you, Jesse. You know what? It would be the Force Maelstrom. How about you, Mark?
Ooh. Now, I got to go too with this, because when I play the video games, it's Force Lightning all day, every day. But if I was living in the Star Wars universe, I would have to go with Peter Petrelli's power, where I can take everyone else's. No, I would have to go with a Jedi mind trick.
Jedi mind trick. Good one. Bethany?
I would go similarly with Mark, where in a video game, if I'm playing Star Wars, my Force Lightning gets maxed out immediately. But in real life, it would be Force Maelstrom, because that combines a Force push that with Force Lightning, which is completely awesome. Good old Force Unleashed.
Yeah.
Unlimited power!
Exactly.
That's going to do it for this episode. Hey, if you stick around through all this Hunger Games talk, thank you. And thanks for tuning in to the Star Wars Report. We'll see you next week, guys.
Revenge. I must have revenge.